Tommy Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. And I'm here with the low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
We are getting on an aeroplane today. Very, very, very excited.
Yes, very excited.
We've been talking about this all week long, and I think we mentioned it in the last week podcast, and we're still not going to tell you where we're going. It's going to be a big mystery, and you've got to follow us on Instagram to see where we land. But it'll be nice. Our Oscars coverage is done. We're entering a slow period for this sort of the things that we cover this time of year. So
we felt it was the right time.
It was the perfect time. It was so great getting, you know, going into the home stretch of our Oscars coverage last week. I was like, we just need to wrap this up and then we are getting out of here. But of course, we are recording a podcast before we leave.
And we are going to be posting.
And yeah, we're going to be posting. I mean, there's still stuff. There's always stuff. Princess Kathy will come out someday or something like that.
We never stop when we travel.
And yeah, all our little laptops and equipments are coming with us. And we will be spending time in our hotel room every day working. But for the most part, things are going to be slower going forward.
Right.
But we do have a podcast to because we couldn't let you go a week without listening to our lovely cartoon voices. And of course, and also because a lot of you were like, okay, when are Tom and Lorenzo doing a podcast about this? Because what I'm talking about is Law Roach, super stylist, mega stylist, superstar stylist, Law Roach, announced his retirement this week and then gave a scorching interview to The Cut. And we have a lot of opinions about it. Imagine that. Who could have seen that coming? But quickly, before we jump into that, to my nerds out there, because honestly,
to my nerds out there,
you're just going to be listening to Lorenzo for most of this podcast because he is Mr. Fashion. And I told him that. I was like, I'm really going to try and shut up and let you do all the talking, which I know I'll fail at that. But to my nerds out there, I just have to give a shout out. If you gave up on Star Trek Picard, believe me, I don't blame you. Season one was, you know, okay, that was rough. And then season two was just, I cannot get over how badly season two ended. Don't even get me started on everyone smiling lovingly at their friend who was turned into a Borg queen. Dumbest thing I've ever seen on Star Trek. But I gotta say, Star Trek Picard is season three is the best season with the Next Generation cast ever, maybe. And I know that's a bold statement, but showrunner Terry Matalas took over for season three, and he's clearly deep into the lore of the, no pun intended, and if you know, you know. Lorenzo has no idea.
I have no idea.
Deep into the lore of Star Trek, and he really knows how to pull things out. It's not just fan service that he's doing. In fact, if it was just fan service, I'd be like, haha, this is cute, fine, you know, it's kind of dumb, but it's fun to see them all again. But he's actually really, in some ways, he and his team, obviously, he didn't write every episode or direct every episode, they're taking an approach similar to what Rian Johnson did with, what was it? Return of the Jedi? Was that? I can't remember. Yeah, Return of the Jedi. And that was a controversial take where he revisited these characters, that you loved from 30 years ago and then, sort of unpacked the darker sides of their personalities or their interactions with each other or that sort of thing. It's not a dark take on, it's pure adventure, but a lot of Picard's old ghosts come home to roost, so to mix my metaphors. And there have been some great confrontations with some great longstanding Next Gen characters, and where things got unpacked that actually, it's right out of the lore. It's right out of the show itself. It's right out, you know, none of this is coming out of nowhere. There's a really fantastic scene with Beverly Crusher and Picard that I never could have imagined back in the days when the show was first on the air. And then I am going to spoil something here, but it was all over the coverage of the show this week, is that the big, big, big surprise, I mean, my eyebrows shot up, was Ro Laren, played by Michelle Forbes, returned. And again, if you know, you know, the way that character left the show and the story, it left a lot hanging. And there was something about the chemistry between Michelle Forbes and Patrick Stewart back in the day that it really was one of the more interesting relationships on the old show. And it barely got developed before she decided she didn't want to be doing Star Trek conventions for the rest of her life. And she she shot out of there. But they brought her back and they really had the two of them hash out their whole history together and why they don't like each other and why she did what she did 30 years ago. And it was honestly some spectacular acting. There's a real story there and it's coming together really well. I won't spoil everything, but it is really playing deep on not just Next Gen lore, but it's also bringing in a lot of stuff from Deep Space Nine. And I got to say, they've mentioned Admiral Janeway about four or five times, and that just makes me think she's showing up later in the season at some point. It's just the best move forward for Star Trek ever done. They've taken the show, you know, chronologically to almost its furthest point, if you don't count Discovery traveling, like, I don't know, 1,000 years in the future. So this is and they're playing on everything. They're playing on the political, you know, atmosphere with, you know, the Romulans, and there's just a lot going on there. And there's a lot about the history of Starfleet and the Federation that's lightly being touched on. So that if you're a fan, if you really loved all that stuff, I got to tell you, come back to it. It's paying off. It is the final season of Star Trek Picard. It feels like they are trying to lay the groundwork for some shows, you know, spinoffs from this point. I got to say, the new character that they introduced, I'm not loving him, Ed Spaliers. I think he is a big hammy actor, and I get it, but we'll see where that goes. Anyway, that is my recommendation. It has been one of, I haven't been recapping it. Lorenzo doesn't even watch it. I've been recapping it because we were at the height of award season and I wasn't sure it was going to be that good. I never bothered asking for screeners for it because we had screeners for the first two seasons, but they were so bad that I didn't have high expectations. I will probably do a write-up when this is all done. Agreed. Because it deserves if it keeps going in this direction, it deserves a love letter by the time it's all done.
I thought your tweet was very key. You felt like a kid with a birthday cake.
Yeah, it just really felt like, wow, someone understands what I loved about these characters and what I loved about this show. And it's always nice to see. I don't believe in a lot of pop culture nostalgia. I didn't need to see this whole cast come back and relive my, you know, younger years. But I do really appreciate it when you revisit old characters and old stories like this and you unpack what those old stories were really saying from a modern lens, from a modern storytelling lens. And I feel like that's what's happening with Picard. Patrick Stewart's doing great work, but honestly, people like Jonathan Frakes is doing like the best work I've ever seen that guy do on camera. And he's also directing half the episode, so he's really got his hand in it. Anyway, can't recommend it enough. If you're a Next Gen fan, it's for you. I swear it's for you. Alrighty.
Nice.
Yes, before we jump into Law of Roach, you're going to hear more of my lovely voice because I need to talk about my Bombas socks once again, which we're fully packed for our European vacation, and I've got nothing but Bombas socks in my luggage. I swear I should take In my life, I know. Bombas makes getting active more comfortable with socks that support your sport, breathable t-shirts that keep you from overheating, and underwear made to move with you. Ready to get active? Think Bombas, the better basics that take sweat-wicking, blister-preventing, friction-free movement seriously. Socks, underwear, and t-shirts are the number 1, 2, and 3 most requested items in homeless shelters. That's why for every comfy item you purchase, Bombas donates another comfy item to someone experiencing homelessness. Performance socks are made with technically advanced features like proprietary hex tech, which incorporates sweat-wicking yarn, supportive strategic zone cushioning, and built-in ventilation to increase airflow. Bombas are a gym bag staple, I can completely tell you that are made to last. And if they experience any wear and tear, Bombas will replace them for life. Go head to toe Bombas in lightweight t-shirts designed to feel cool against your skin, underwear so airy and breathable you may forget you're wearing any, and socks designed to make every workout more comfortable. No matter how you like to get active, Bombas has something for you. Gripper socks help you stay balanced in Pilates and bar. Left-right foot contoured running socks gives you a perfect fit that won't slide in your shoe. Marina wool golf socks keep you comfy and supported all day while on the course. And Bombas's 100% happiness guarantee means you're covered for life. Reach out anytime to their happiness team for easy returns, exchanges, or replacements. So, Go to bombas.com/TLO and use code TLO for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/TLO and use code TLO at checkout for 20% off your first purchase. I love when I'm doing these live reads, you're looking at me like, who are you? We're sitting here in our dining. You have to understand, we're sitting here in our dining room, and I'm reading like ad copy.
It's a person
with his ad copy voice. But for real, love my Bombas. That's no lie.
No,
and
that is
honestly,
very true.
It's the one thing so many people have told us over the years: family members, friends, total strangers. Oh my God, I bought Bombas because of you guys, and I love them.
The way they fit. I mean, that's the thing about socks, because usually people don't give a damn about how they fit.
No.
You know, but oh my God, you put one on.
But
and
Bombas
just,
gives a damn.
Yes, they do.
I should write their copy. Bombas
give
we
a
give a damn.
Damn.
All right.
Yes.
Lorenzo, okay, so celebrity stylist Law Roach, big superstar. He made his name and made her name by his collaboration with Zendaya over the years. And he has, he's had a lot of high profile clients. He's probably the one stylist that a lot of quote-unquote civilians can name. He's a known style. Way more people know Law Roach's name than Ilaria Urbanati's name or something like that.
And that has a lot to do with Zendaya, I have to say. I mean,
of course.
We did get a press release or whatever email saying that Zendaya is one of the most Googled black actress in the country. So that has a lot to do with her success. And it's a beautiful story between them because the two of them pretty much, became famous together.
Right.
She did stuff before she met him, but she was looking for a more adult, more, professional.
It was always so obvious what they were doing.
Right, right.
And that's why we covered them so much. And I remember back in the day, before Zendaya, when she was transitioning out of her Disneyhood, and we used to get people complain, like, why are you covering this Disney girl so much?
Oh my God.
Remember that?
I forgot
and
about that.
A couple of times we were like, listen, she's doing it. She's really smart about how she's using the red carpet. She's clearly got a game. And we didn't know Law's name at the time, but that was when very early on, we were like, that girl is, she's adept at this.
It was pretty much the beginning of his career, and he talks about it all the time, how she gave him a chance and how he did his best to help her look her best on the red carpet. And it worked, and it's been very successful. So he is an amazing stylist. He really is. He loves fashion. This interview, did we mention the interview?
He gave an interview to The Cut.
Yes. An interview by Lindsay Peoples.
Yes, it's a spectacular interview, and she's covered the world of how blackness intersects with fashion before. It's her specialty.
Yeah, she's a great writer, and it's a great interview. She asked the best questions you could hope for. And it's a great interview. He's kind of very honest about it, and
bluntly so.
And he talks about a lot of things that we want to, unpack here, because they are interesting and important to understand how it works, how fashion works, how the style world works.
Just to reiterate, because I think I said it at the top of the hour, the reason this happened is because he made a very public announcement that he was resigning.
Yeah,
he was retiring from styling completely.
And it was kind of a bomb because he went on Instagram, he posted on Instagram saying, I'm retiring because of all the lies and it's just, it's too much for me. And everyone's like, wow, what happened?
And they thought it was because he didn't get to sit front row.
The thing is that he did that right after, and maybe that was the last straw. Who knows?
It might have been the last straw.
It went viral. It was all over TikTok that he was trying to, he was, you know, they were, he was arriving with Zendaya at the Louis Vuitton fashion show. He was late. They were late. And then when you're late, you have to understand, when you're late, everybody's already there and they're all looking at you, and you come in and everybody's looking at you. So you'd like the center of attention, especially if you're a big star like she is.
Right.
So everyone is looking at them. She sat down and they didn't have a seat for him. And we were explaining the whole thing.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
But that's what happened. And so the video caught that he's looking around trying to get help.
And it does, it appears like a tense moment.
Right.
It does.
And you can't hear them. So at some point, Zendaya turns back and says, well, she points to a seat behind her. And it gives the impression, if you just watch the video, that she was saying, well, why don't you sit here.
But he says that's not. Well, that's let's not, get into it.
Yeah, that's not what happened. Apparently, she was saying, well, this is, you know, I forget his name. Her assistant.
Mm-hmm.
This is whatever's, you know, assistant seat. And then she's like, what about you? She's like talking to him and trying to figure out what happened. And so he's standing there confused. Finally, they gave him a seat, obviously, but he wasn't sitting together. He wasn't sitting, with Zendaya, which that's what he does most of the time, I guess all the time. So it became a thing. And right after that, he said, you know, I'm done with this business of styling. So, it's interesting. And of course, everyone was like, what happened? And there's a lot. And we'll talk about all the things that we know about him and the industry and stuff. But so he gave this interview and he explained the video. And then it does make sense that he said, you know, I was just confused. I didn't know. Because here's what, and then, you know, it was very interesting to be on TikTok and read all the comments about how people were, you know, understanding that whole thing or imagine what happened. They were like, well, don't they have a seat number or whatever? Don't they get the seats are assigned?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, if you're anybody else but celebrities. Celebrities, what happens is they just walk in with the help of somebody.
Yeah, let's lay this. From what we know about going to many, many fashion shows in New York, we've never been to the Paris shows or the Milan shows, but it's all largely done
the
same way.
Yeah.
Celebrities always, usually the bigger the celebrity, the later they're going to arrive at the show.
Yeah,
so celebrities always arrive late at shows. There's nothing notable about him arriving, about the two of them arriving
sitting there
late.
Alone. Yeah. Front row.
So, and it's also should be noted that stylists don't generally sit with celebrity clients in the front row. You might see stylists in the front row, but they're not usually sitting with
often them. Because a lot of people were saying, well, stylists don't sit front row. That's not true. A lot of them do,
but not with the stars.
Not with the stars.
And let me just explain that part of it. The stars are all shoved together on a bench. And that's the other thing. It's like, oh, assigned seating. Yeah, it's usually benches. And the benches are assuming that everyone has an ass the size of a napkin. And that's how many people get shoved into
it's
that
so
bench.
True, yeah.
So like a cocktail napkin, not even like a luncheon napkin. Anyway, and they are shoved in like that literally on purpose so that you can get as many of them in any shot ever taken of them. You can get the whole front row of all the famous faces.
Right.
And when Zendaya took her seat, there was literally no other space on the, and Emma Stone was sitting right next to her. And there was all this, as you said to me, there was like all this TikTok chatter about why didn't one of them get up and give their seat to him so he could sit with her. And that is very much not how it works. Yeah. Emma Stone, as Lorenzo said, these people don't have tickets. They don't know where they're quote unquote supposed to sit. They show up and a group of publicists hand them off one to another until they're taken to their seat. They don't have to think about a thing.
A thing.
And that's not, and let me just say, that's not because they're living some sort of aristocratic life. These things are freaking chaotic. Most stars are going to several of them in a day. The only way they can show up looking photogenic and perfect is if someone else handles all the bullshit of getting them there. They don't have to hail a cab or an Uber or anything.
I mean, sometimes they're a publicist or whatever in the car before they arrive. They're calling the fashion house and say, we're arriving.
Right.
So they
have someone meet us at the front door.
Exactly. So they have someone outside waiting for
right.
them, and then they bring them
they are
in.
Passed around.
Yes.
Like pampered pets, but they're really not pampered. It's very stressful.
And that's what happened. You see a guy behind them, like, you know, bringing them to their
right.
seats. And the poor guy, I guess he didn't know or whatever. He was confused. And you have to understand everyone, it was the show was about to start and she's late. So
one more thing, just to set the scene is, and I've been walking through the crowd to my seat when this sort of thing was going on. Remember, Kim Kardashian almost knocked us over.
Oh my God, yeah.
Kim and Kanye almost knocked us over. But when you're walking in that situation and there's a celebrity, they can't see a goddamn thing because every blinding light is in their face and the venue is usually dimly lit at that point. So they are completely blind and disoriented when they walk into that space. It's a lot... when you see goofy expressions in the front row or things looking very tense or whatever, people like to write stories about this stuff. But every time I'm like, no, they don't understand. It's a circus. They are completely confused and they can't right. see a thing.
The sitting thing is serious business, folks.
Very serious.
Usually you have celebrities on one side and people like us, they usually... We most of the time we got first or second row, but they put us on the other side because you know why they do that? Because they don't want us to hear what they're talking. Instead of putting us behind the celebrities, it happened a couple of times when they did, but most of the time they don't because they don't want you to write about what you hear them talking.
Right. Because some people were doing that. Right. Some bloggers were doing that.
It's a whole, you know, thing, the seating chart. And it, like, editors, magazine editors, they can't sit together because they'll fight. There's a huge scandal, huge case of Christian Siriano. I guess these people didn't know better. It was the beginning of his career. He put all the editors together.
Yeah.
So it was a whole thing.
And that's why a lot of them don't go to a show this day.
That's why they don't go, because they were so pissed that they're all sit together. You just don't do that.
And this leads into Law's
yes.
comments, because it's a blistering interview where he just takes a bunch of people in this world to task, and this whole system to task. And Lorenzo's right. When we both read it, we were like, wow, he's really right. going there. This is exactly what it's like. Anyway, I'm shutting up now again.
Well,
Lorenzo,
the thing is,
go ahead.
You have to understand, you treat it according to where you see it, pretty much. So, you know, you have first row and second row. These are the people that matter. And everybody else is just, you know, you have your ticket. And then you have the people standing in the back. So the PR people get very obnoxious and very full of themselves most of the time, how they treat you and depend where you are. So he talks about, and it's so true, he talks about, like, he was so excited going to fashion shows for the first time and so on, you know, first black person, first row, blah, blah, blah. And how sometimes, because it gets very chaotic sometimes, and people try to steal somebody else's seat. It's a nightmare. It happened to me once that, you know, the person, you know, the PR person comes around checking, and if there is a, you know, a problem with seating, they'll go to the black person and ask
right.
and ask for their seat number.
Right.
You know, can I see
We've
your ticket?
We've seen this play out.
Can I see your ticket? We saw that many times. And it happened to me. I forget what show that I was front row. And
I wasn't with you because we used to split up and go to different
you
shows.
You weren't with me. I was front row and got very chaotic because these ladies sitting next to me, they saw the empty seats and they start taking the seats. And, you know, and then 10, 15 minutes later, the people showed up and they wanted their seats and it became very chaotic. And the PR person went beeline to me and she's like, can I see your ticket?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, why? And she's like, well, I mean, we're just checking. Anyway, she went to me
checking everyone who wasn't a white girl.
Yeah, she went to me because I was the only man sitting front row. Everybody else was these, you know, white, skinny ladies. And they, you know, bloggers, fashion bloggers or whatever, they thought, okay, well, maybe this guy is not supposed to be here. It happens. It only happened to me once. He says it happened to him a lot and still happens. And I totally believe him because it is true.
Everything he described is so on point that there's no reason not to believe. I mean, not that I had any suspicions about it, but, so why don't you talk about some of the stuff that he talked about in terms of styling, what the politics of styling and why he's sick of it?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things that I want to mention that maybe that's why he got fed up with the whole thing. I mean, I remember when I got very excited that he started styling Anya Taylor-Joy.
Right.
And all of a sudden she was gone.
Right.
She wasn't on his Instagram page anymore.
And her outfit suddenly sucked.
And I'm like, what happened? Anyway, what happened was that she became bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's usually what happened. She became the face of...
She became an ambassador for Dior.
For Dior. She's also with Tiffany & Co., and they're all from the same company. And apparently people representing her and representing the brands decided that it wasn't a great match and that she should look for somebody else. And then she did, because, you know, we're talking about millions and millions of dollars here in terms of contract with these companies. I mean, you do what you told. So that really annoyed him. And I think the whole thing started because he styled her, and Dior, the Instagram account, posted pictures of Anya Taylor-Joy and how gorgeous she looks. This is a beautiful look, blah, 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 but never mentioned him as a stylist.
Yeah.
And that really pissed him off. And he said something on his Instagram account, like, you know, complaining that Dior didn't mention anything about him styling the looks. And that didn't go well with Dior. That's allegedly that I'm, you know, that's what I heard. And sort of started some sort of like, you know, tense moment between him and the house. And there's another story. There are other stories, but there's also a story with that he is a little difficult, and that he says so in an interview that he doesn't filter himself. Like when he wants to say something, he says something, and
right.
he just doesn't have the mechanism or whatever. He doesn't have the tools to filter.
He talks a lot about how this is a world white women.
Yes, yes.
And the rules, the social engagement rules, the way you talk to people, everything is white women, you know, I don't want to say how white women prefer it, because obviously not, but you know, I think you know what I mean. It's not a venue for a black man to express himself.
Right, right. And you have to understand, these people, they feel very empowered in their position in the fashion. You'd be surprised. I mean, not surprised, but it's amazing how you get a job that you probably won't have in the, you know, 6 months later, because that's how they, you know, keep changing all the time. But they just feel like, you know, they can do whatever they want. And I can see people not having a great relationship with him, you know, in terms of like doing business and communicating and stuff, and then just putting him aside, saying, you know, find somebody else. This guy's problematic.
Right.
He says that in an interview.
Right.
I'm not making this up. Like how people will say, well, you know, it's kind of hard to deal with this guy. Why don't you pick another stylist?
Right.
And some people did, because
there's a list, and it's like 10 women, and they're all white women.
Yeah. And it became worse because he started getting like white clients, you know, celebrities, talents, white talents, as he calls. So that became even more. And he was like the first one. That's why he became so big. I mean, we're talking about Anne Hathaway here, and you know, Anya Taylor-Joy and Celine Dion. My God, he says Celine Dion changed his life.
Right.
So when you have, you know, very famous people like these women, white women, and he's a black guy, you know, styling them, it's a big deal.
Again, we should explain that there, and he mentions this, there are black male stylists like Jason Bolden and Wayman and Micah, but they almost exclusively have black or client or people of color as their clients. They you can go to their Instagram pages and see their clientele, and there's almost no white people in their clientele. It is very segregated.
It is very segregated. There's a ton of white skinny ladies doing this for a long time, and
white skinny lady actresses and pop stars will just turn to them because you know,
I mean, great people doing great stuff,
very talented women.
I'm not trying to disparage him, whatever, but they have white clients, and they have very important white clients, and so when someone as white as Anya Taylor-Joy,
they don't get any whiter. Well, that's not fair. She is a Latina.
Anyway,
but
when you show up Latina like that, they want a white celebrity. Yeah. I mean, a white stylist to you know, help you.
Right.
That's how it works, which is a shame. It's shameful. And you know, I'm not defending it, but that's how it is. And I think he's tired of all that. He talks about reading the interview. I just felt, because I love fashion, I, you know, it was so wonderful to read about him, how much he loves fashion, how much he was watching Rachel Zoe, the reality TV show.
The Rachel Zoe Project, which we used to recap.
I know.
I wonder if he used to read our recap.
Which is hysterical. He says, you know, he kept watching the show and she's attending on this fashion show. And so like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do. And, you know, more power to him. There he is doing
exactly.
It.
Exactly. It's
doing
an amazing,
amazing
ascent.
Yes.
Now, I wanted to sort of guide you to the part that we were like nodding our head, where he talks about all the people in between.
Yes.
And I think he was very astute in this. Well, I think he's very astute generally in this interview, because he was making very strategic points. he was asked if he what this means for him retiring, and he kept reiterating, this does not mean I'm done with fashion. He's just done with celebrity styling. And you'll note that he's very careful about not criticizing celebrities directly. He's somewhat careful about not criticizing fashion executives, and their names have come up in the interview directly. And as I said to Lorenzo, I was like, well, he's smartly playing the game because he's right. clearly launching his own line. He's going to become a fashion designer, right. He should.
Yes, he wants to be... He still wants to be in fashion. I mean, he just right. walked for Boss, the brand,
right.
as a model. And I'm sure he'll have lines and, you know,
he'll everything. Have deals lined up before the month is
out. Yes. I mean, he'll have plenty of stuff to do, and maybe I'm quite sure he'll get back to styling at some point. Who knows?
Well, he hedged his bet with Zendaya, where he's like, yeah. I'm not going to be her stylist, but maybe I'll be her creative right. director and work yeah. with her stylist. And I'm like, I'm not criticizing, but it's fine.
I think he's just tired of everything.
Can we talk about the in-between people that he was criticizing?
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is that there is one, I forget who, I don't think he mentioned the person. There was a talent, as he calls them, contacted him directly, and she wanted him to style her. And but, you know, it just became this big thing that she became famous, she became bigger, and her people gave a list of she contacted him directly, said, I want to work with you, you were amazing, blah, blah, blah. And he said, sure, I'll contact your people, blah, blah, blah. And then her people completely ignored the whole thing and gave her a list of 5 stylists that she should, you know, look for, not him included. Like, of course, right. his name was not included. So, you know, long story short, she went with one of the people on the list, and
she wound up telling him this later.
And she told him later because I think they met some. Oh, I thought we were going to work together or something like that. And she said, "Well, my people told me to go with somebody else."
Now we're not stylists, but in our years of getting seated at fashion shows and dealing with that world, as soon as he talked about the in-between people, I was like, "Yeah, I know what he means." Like just. The fashion world is so, and the celebrity world is structured in such a way that there are so many gatekeepers between
yes.
you
yes.
and the people making the decisions.
And he talks about them all the time.
Now, we were approaching it largely as fashion, you know, independent fashion journalists, very different world, but it's still the same thing where you are constantly ass-kissing certain publicists, and then you find out that certain things were assumed about you. So many things were assumed about us before our names were... You know, that we right. were just reality bloggers, that we, you know, whatever. And we had to spend years and years and years overcoming that, you know, learning how to navigate the in-between people to get to the people to make the decisions. So, and we're at low level. He's at the upper level.
Right.
I cannot imagine the gatekeeping that goes on at that level.
And it's exhausting. When he says it's exhausting, I truly believe him because in general, in the fashion world, people don't keep their job for a long time.
They move on.
And they move on, or they just stay for 6 months. So you spend all this time, and I can feel...
Yeah, developing relationships with PR people.
The frustration reading his interview.
Book publishing or something.
Right. You spend all this time developing this relationship with a PR person, and finally, oh my God, incredible. I'm getting front row, and this person's wonderful. And then they leave the company.
Or they get married.
And then you're like,
and they retire.
Shit,
yeah.
Now I have to start...
Dozens of times this has
again
happened.
Again.
It's actually the same thing in the world of, like, to television criticism, like in order to get screeners for these shows, you're on a list, and then after a while you suddenly realize you're off the list because the person who made the list left 2 years ago.
So you have to call them again.
Start all over again.
It's a lot of and I think that's his frustration, that it's not just, you know, picking a nice dress and making, you know, Zendaya wear it. It's all the bullshit, all the emails, all the phone calls, all that conversation. And yeah, it's frustrating. And then I can also understand that, you know, especially now that more and more celebrities are getting affiliated with a house. And then you know, from a creative point of view,
it's difficult.
Like you get someone like Kristen Stewart. I mean, you know, you're going to have to be picking a Chanel.
Or Ana de Armas, who it has to be Louis Vuitton.
I mean, so that limits a lot of your creativity, what you do, you know, your power and skills as a stylist.
I agree.
You just know it's going to be a Chanel. You know it's going to be a Louis Vuitton. And then the pressure to wear a certain look from a certain collection, because you know that if she's wearing Louis Vuitton and it's now, then it has to be like a spring and fall.
Right,
look.
It can't be. Yeah.
No, you can't just pick something.
No.
It's because yeah.
it's and he. This is one of the other things we both loved about this interview was that he. Not that I feel like our opinions on these matters have been legitimized and verified many times over in the years, but it's always nice to see someone at the very top of the game basically reiterate all the things we have said in our red carpet coverage about how it's brand deals and it's promotional and there's a lot of money on the line and there's a lot of people in the mix. And in that, the stylist is trying to come up with a creative vision and tell a story. Like, that's how we have always approached our red carpet coverage. That dual nature of, you have to look at this as a purely mercenary exercise with a lot of money and a lot of people involved in it. And at the same time, the artist and the stylist are trying to create some sort of narrative or image or story about themselves. And that's how we have always approached our red carpet coverage. And it's nice to see someone at the top of that game say, yes, that is exactly what it all is.
He is truly an artist and he really knows what he's doing. There was one part in the interview that he explained his process that I thought it was so beautiful, that when he gets a new client, he Googles that person, checks all the looks, all the red carpet looks, what works, what doesn't. And then when they meet, the first thing he asks is, you know, what do you like, what do you hate it about your looks? Because he wants to, and I think that's great, not just about the great things that this person wore, but also the bad things, the horrible things. And
right.
So
you learn about them.
Yes, because he says, and he beautifully says that, you know, because when the client walks in, I want to make sure that I have all the stuff she likes.
Right.
Or he likes. So it's awesome. It's truly, I mean, he really understands fashion. He really understands styling. He makes incredible choices. He's great.
He mentioned something, and this is something that people don't get about how the stylist-client interaction works, where he says, you know, ultimately Zendaya picks the dress. It's her choice. But because we have a relationship with her, if we're disagreeing over something, all I have to do is say, Zendaya, this is the dream. This is the one. And she goes with it.
Right.
Stylists don't tell clients what to wear. It's still up to them.
Yes.
But they really use their influence to try and get them to go in a certain direction.
Most of the time, I mean, the relationship he has with Zendaya is absolutely amazing. It's just a dream kind of like relationship.
And you
client.
Can see it in the results.
Most of the time, you know, the stylist will help suggest things and bring things, but it ultimately is the client makes a decision, not just by herself or himself. You know, it's the husband and the friend, the cousin, the mother, everybody makes a decision.
Right.
That's why the stylists always say, I don't know if this person is wearing what I picked until I see it on the red carpet, because it could change in the hotel room. Panic happens. And, you know, the sister, the mother, the daughter, the boyfriend will say, I'm not so sure about the luck.
Speaking of which, you want to talk about the Priyanka Chopra story that he told?
Here's the thing. We've said all these wonderful things about, Law Roach. Yes, he's wonderful at everything. But, you know, you can also read between
the
lines.
In
the interview that he can be a little bit of a prima donna. He can be a little bit difficult.
Yes.
And as he says himself, I mean, he says it in the interview that, you know, he has trouble with the language, how to say it and everything, because he's a little too honest about everything. And there's a case with Priyanka Chopra that apparently they were discussing sizes and she wanted to wear something. I don't know the exact quote, but anyway.
He used the term sample size and said that she wasn't sample size. Right. Now, this is an industry term. Samples usually come in size 0 or size 2. It's not a judgment. That is what a sample size is. You are not a sample size. It's harder to acquire things for free if you're not a sample size. But you can tell in his interview that he is a blunt speaker. And I think this is where a woman stylist is probably in many ways preferable to women stars, because I think they would have been a lot gentler about how that was said.
Yeah. Apparently, you know, had a hard time dealing with it, and I totally understand that. You know, she felt horrible. You know, and that she felt like, all right, well, I'm not a sample size, so I can't wear anything, and that kind of stuff. So it was really difficult. And he talks about another client, Tiffany Haddish.
Right.
He talks about how her weight you know, changes often, and that's why she buys a lot of the stuff.
She doesn't expect free stuff. But yeah. Even in his wording, he said, you know, she'll get a little thick. And I'm like, oh, see, honey, I've been writing about this for a long time. You can't use that kind of language, even if that is how fashion editors talk. That's how casting directors talk and everything. That is the fashion world. But you can't just tell a woman she's getting a little thick or she's too big to wear those clothes.
Especially if she is a celebrity.
A celebrity. Their egos are so delicate and everything. And
I can see him saying stuff like that to her, and the publicist having a meltdown right next to him.
Yeah. Which isn't to say he deserves any of the sort of poor treatment he got, but it's more of an example of how he did find it difficult to fit into a certain world. Yeah.
That's what it is. All the work behind. And it's very, I think this is all fascinating. And
it reiterates everything we have ever said or written about this world. And that's part. And it's really great to see someone at the top, because no one talks about this stuff.
Right.
They all want to keep their freaking jobs.
Right.
So, but this is it. This is what that world is like. This is what the stylist world is like. I also want to bring up something that we have an opportunity to say this. It's often quite difficult to source the style credits for a lot of Law's clients, because unlike a lot of stylists, he does not post them on his socials.
I want to bring this up. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Because he talks in an interview, and he mentioned, you know, he talked about complaining that Dior didn't mention him and so on. But I have to say, and this is a criticism here.
It was always frustrating for us.
It's most stylists post all the credits on Instagram. They post not only, you know, shoes, bags, dress or whatever, but they also
mention makeup, jewels.
They also mention the hair, the makeup, the people who did the nails. They mention everybody. And we made a decision a long time ago now that we would credit everybody, including the nails people, because they're all important. They
and that
all
way
have
you
a job.
You can look at their whole range of work.
Right,
if you search their names on our site, you can see what a certain manicure is, what they tend to do.
Exactly. I mean, if you see their name, you know, you can go and Google them and maybe you get ideas for nails. That's my point when we post those things. So that's why I put all these credits. And we had stylists thanking us for mentioning them, and because they don't get credit. Most of the time they don't. That's why it's so frustrating frustrating for him. But having said that, he never mentions makeup and hair people.
No.
Ever. Maybe occasionally.
Maybe he doesn't get along with them.
But
I
most
don't know.
Of the time he doesn't feel the need to mention them, which I think I disagree with it. And I was a little disappointed when I saw that happening all the time, because I would go to his site, to his Instagram account, and there was no mention of makeup or hair people. And most of the time I had to go to Zendaya's Instagram account and get the credit, because she would mention, but he wouldn't. And you might make the point of, he's paying these people, they're not working with him, blah, blah, blah. Yes, but in that world, you know,
it's about the relationships.
It's about the relationships, and that might piss some people off, and you never know who.
And he makes it really clear in the interview. He doesn't do that sort of game playing, and he's not into that sort of. He doesn't come from a background where that sort of ass kissy networking is anything that matters to him. I really do get that. I understand it.
So I thought it was interesting that he was criticizing Dior, but at the same time, you kind of don't do it, you know.
Right.
I also want to point out.
Yeah, that's a very good point, though. He was mad at Dior for not crediting him, but he doesn't credit other people.
And again, you can say, well, he was talking about him as a stylist. Makeup and hair people are not necessarily, you know, his employees or working with him, blah, blah, blah. But you know, anyway, that's how it works. You usually mention everybody. The other thing that I see happening is because in the past, nobody gave a shit about stylists. Nobody gave a shit about costume designers. And all of a sudden, all these people are very important, and rightfully so. These people deserve the recognition.
Right.
But I do feel that with social media, everybody having an Instagram account, everyone is famous now. All the stylists are famous and everybody's famous. And you see makeup and hair people for Jennifer Lopez, very famous now. And they, you know, all these people are getting more deals and blah, blah, blah. And I do feel, I see it happening that, you know, they become more famous. And at some point, the lines get blurred between client and celebrity.
Oh, yeah. Some of these A-list stylists, you go to their Instagram pages, and a couple of times I'm like, oh, who's this client? I mean, it's them posing on vacation somewhere. Right. And
so it's interesting that I do feel that we're getting to a point now where celebrities and, I mean, I'm stylists, makeup and hair people and all these people feel that they're
on product.
Not only that, but they're kind of on the same level as their client. Their
clients, yeah.
And that's never going
to
work.
That's not helpful. That's not helpful to what you're trying to do. You have to understand that you're there to do a job for them.
Going back to the Louis Vuitton show where, Laura Roach was standing there looking for his heat, you have to understand it's all money. It's all business. It was Zendaya. Yep. It was
Emma Stone.
And it was Ana de Armas. And they all are faces. They're all
big faces
working for Louis Vuitton.
Right.
They're all models for Louis Vuitton. So they all have to sit together for that picture.
Yeah, you can't sit there.
And right next to Zendaya was Delphine Arnault, who is the daughter of the owner of everything.
Of everything.
The daughter of the owner of, LVMH. The mega company that embraces everything, Dior, Tiffany, Givenchy, you name it. So they're not going to move so that he can sit down next to Zendaya. That's not going to happen. And I honestly believe that he was more confused waiting for help than annoyed.
I do want to make that point.
I agree.
And I also think that we have been, obviously very different level, but we have been in a situation where someone couldn't find our seat and we were standing and people were looking at us.
Right.
And it is nerve-wracking and humiliating. And we're white. So standing there as a black man in the Dior show in Paris and everybody's Louis Vuitton show in Paris and everybody's looking at you, there's no way he wasn't tense. He was probably a little humiliated and extremely aware that he could not overreact to anything. He's
he has had bad experience. I mean, I forget what show, but I think it was also a Louis Vuitton show that he arrived and they didn't let him in using the VIP entrance because...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and there's video of that.
There's video that he's very frustrated and annoyed and he's explaining who he is and they still don't let him in. And then he, gets annoyed and
which he's got a right.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course, he is
a VIP. There's no denying that.
Listen, stylists, that's why most of the time the houses love stylists and they make everything possible for them to attend the show, give them the best seat and everything because these are the people... picking those dresses, making those choices. So you want these people there because so they can see the looks and, choose those looks for their clients. That, and most of the time, stylists will have a first row seat. It's a different situation. It's a different relationship between Zendaya and Laura Roach. And I think that's what happened there.
Right.
He says that they always sit together because they make their choices together. When they see the looks going down the runway, they according to him, they need to be together so they can be they can talk about the looks, which, you have to know. You can always go online and see the look later. But I understand they've been working together for a long time. They have this friendship relationship. He was frustrated that he was sitting there. So that's, a lot of things. You combine all these things, you put all these things together. And that's why, he was annoyed and frustrated and tired.
Yeah.
Tired of dealing with all that.
I agree. And I think it was a very interesting encapsulation of that world. I can't wait to see what he does next. Yeah. I do think we're going to hear that he's launching a line or that he's launching a fragrance or something's coming.
Yeah. The thing is, which the most fascinating thing about the whole thing is that, and it maybe more people will discuss later, is it's the thing now that stylists, hair and makeup are becoming so famous that somehow, in a way, because of the attention they're getting, they feel like they're on the same level of their clients, as their clients. And it's not going to happen. That's not the case. And it will cause a lot of friction, I think.
Right.
Anyway.
But we'll see. I wonder if there's going to be any ripple effect on the bridges that he's burned here. But then again, he's mostly burned bridges with nameless PR people or, you know, publicists and that sort of thing. So.
He's going to be fine. He's
going to
be fine.
He's going to be
he's
fine.
He's extremely
He would
talented.
Not have done this if he didn't have shit lined up or plans ahead.
Oh, my God, yes.
So
yes,
he's
yes.
going to be fine. Very interesting to see what he does next because he is extremely talented. And I actually would love to see him design a line. And, I think it would be fabulous.
Right. And also another great thing about him giving this interview and speaking out about it, it's that, you know, there are a lot of incredibly talented black stylists out there, and they need a chance to expand their clientele and have, why not have white clients? You know, why not? They need the exposure. They're very, very talented. They do a beautiful job. So, you know, we need to acknowledge these people too, not just the white people.
Agreed. And I believe that is it yes. for us this week. We are dashing off to the airport very soon. and like I said, tune in on our Instagram to see where we land. And we're going to have a lovely week. And we hope you have a lovely week too. Until we talk to you next time, take care. Love you. Mean it. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.